Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network, with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Welcome to Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and I'm your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs on the first and third Sunday of every month at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time. Another Fork in the Road is for anyone with a brain injury, anyone who is caring for a brain injured person, or anyone with any interest in learning more about brain injury. Brain injury is not discriminating. It can happen to anyone, anytime, and anywhere. And believe me, I know it does. The Brain Trauma Foundation states that there are more than 5 million people in the United States living with some form of brain injury. But most folks do not even know about brain injury. I know I never did, not until it came to live on my doorstep. On Another Fork in the Road, I try to raise awareness of brain injury and to help folks to understand what survivors and caregivers experience. On the third Sunday of each month, I interview brain injury survivors or caregivers to see how they traverse their world of brain injury. I host therapists, medical professionals, and authors to gain insight into what they offer survivors. And on each first Sunday of the month, like today, I host a discussion panel to examine pertinent topics related to brain injury, such as depression, neural fatigue, anger, or various other symptoms of brain injury. Just a little snippet about me. For those of you who are new to my show, I came on the brain injury scene in 2005 when my husband David had a brain injury. You can learn more about that on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. I shared David's and my story in 4 episodes on this very show, starting in August 2014, the last of which in November 2014 featured a discussion with David himself. I also interviewed David more recently on April 19, 2020, and that was pretty much at the beginning of that pandemic, because I wanted his perspective on his brain injury after 15 years, and mostly because he is a retired professor of microbiology, I wanted his perspective and his understanding of COVID-19 before the pandemic. So you can find my archived shows on my blog at, and this is where I always remember to say, have a pencil and paper ready, because I will be throwing out URLs throughout the show that you might want to jot down to check in on later after we say our goodbyes. But it's at my blog is survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. That's all one word. All lowercase. Just click the On the Air Show Menu tab under the Category section on the right sidebar. It's easy. Or you can type David Fugerski in the search box on the right sidebar to learn more. Same last name as mine. You can also read our complete story in my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, which was published by Right Life Publishing and released in November of 2018. You can find Prisoners, as I so fondly call it, as an ebook and as a print book at all your local book haunts. I hope to have the audio version, well, I shouldn't say that, I hope to have the audio version in all bookstores as soon as possible, but the audio version is completed and is you can be picked up on Amazon for sure. I'm not sure about bookstores, but I would imagine that they would order it for you if you wish. So, yeah, so go to my website, DonnaFigurski.com, to learn more about me. So I hope that you're going to find my show fun and informative tonight. And I hope that you'll visit the shows of the other hosts on Brain Injury Radio. There are shows every night between 7 and 10 p.m. Pacific Time, but you can also tune in at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time on weekends, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, to listen to your favorite shows, too. Brain Injury Radio airs across the United States and in 36 countries. Now, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Tonight's show is called Role Changes After Brain Injury. And my panelists are Bob Millsap, and it was going to be Juliet Madsen. Unfortunately, Juliet had a medical emergency in her family and so had to bow out this afternoon. But I hope that we'll get Juliet's input on another show in the future very, very soon. So if you have a brain injury, now we're going to be talking about role changes. So if you have a brain injury and are the close family member of someone with a brain injury, you know that life changes in an instant, like on a dime, as fast as you can blink an eye, all those cliches. Not much remains normal. Brain injury affects every survivor differently, and no brain injury is the same. I always like to liken them to fingerprints, which we know are not the same. And I don't know whether you know, but there are no two snowflakes that are exactly the same either. So it's really kind of it's interesting. Brain injury, because of the brain is so complex and there's so many areas to be affected, it's never going to be affect. It'll never affect a brain injury will never affect any person exactly the same way as another. So it's a unique experience. So it's obvious that life will change for the brain injury survivor. Makes sense, right? I mean, things are going to be different. But it also greatly affects the close family members. Roles change between husband and wife, between parent and child, and between siblings. And that can happen in an instant because of a brain injury. So tonight's guest, Bob Millsap, will talk about these changes in his life and his wife's life and his family's life and how they're coping with their newfound roles. So let me just tell you a little wee bit about Bob, and then we'll welcome him to the show. Bob Millsap is the caregiver for his spouse, Shelley Rupert Millsap. Bob became a caregiver for his wife when a freak accident occurred in their kitchen, proving that brain injuries can happen anywhere to anyone and at any time. Shelley was in the wrong place when a bottle of homemade soda sitting on her counter exploded. The explosion knocked Shelley unconscious for about 20 minutes. With much difficulty and persistence, I might add, Shelley made her way to an urgent care facility in blizzard-like conditions in a remote area of Idaho. Shelley now lives with an invisible brain injury. Well, I'm hearing a lot of noise there on the other side and on the radio. Bob, can you hear that?
It might have been me. I was moving around a little bit. I'm secure again, so that might have been me.
Okay, no swimming allowed right now.
How's it sounding now?
I'll explain. It's okay now. I'll explain that comment in just a minute. But so anyhow, Bob came to he's an amazing caregiver for his wife, and I can say that because I know Bob and Shelley personally now because we became friends after learning that we lived in the same part of the desert. But Bob and his wife, Shelly, were guests on my show when they discussed Shelly's brain injury as Bob's role and Bob's role as Shelly's caregiver. If you'd like to hear their complete story, you can go to my blog. Remember what it is? SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. And on the right sidebar, click on the air show menu. Scroll to October 16, 2016, to the show called Meet the Millsaps. You can also type Bob and Shelley's names into the search box to read their interviews in Caregivers and Survivors Speak Out, respectively. Bob also writes a blog called 10,000 Days, and you can check that out, not now, but after the show, 10,000days.blog. So check that out and read Bob's story. And I know Bob is in the middle of writing a book about lots of interesting things about the brain injury and everything that he's going to talk about too. So, Bob, welcome to you, and I'm so happy to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a while. It's amazing when you said the first time we were on was in 2016. It's been five years already, and
I know. Can you believe that?
I've been on several times with you, and I enjoy it, so thank you.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I'm going to just let the audience know how we met, because I had written an article, well, a chapter in another friend's book, and Shelley had also written a chapter for this particular book. So the author of that book, or the presenter of that book, had a group meeting with the authors, and we were all on Zoom. Even this is before the pandemic. But we were all on Zoom together, and we were going and talking about, where we're from and a little bit about ourselves. And Shelley said that she lived in a town that was right next door to me. And I was like, oh, my gosh, we have to get together and we have to meet. Well, since then, Bob and Shelley have moved to the same town as me. So now we're literally only a few miles apart. So we get together for lunches and dinners often before the pandemic. But we're going to do that again as soon as we get a little more freedom here. So, I have to explain, well, maybe Bob can explain the funny noise we were hearing earlier. We're both doing shows in odd places tonight. And, Bob, why don't you start and tell me, what was making that funny noise?
So, typically, I go upstairs, go and get secure and do the show upstairs. And I was getting ready to do that today, and I thought, you know what, I can do this show from outside. And so I'm doing it at my pool. Got my misters going. We've got the misting system put in. And so anyway, I'm sitting here, and it feels great. It was only like 103 today, Donna. So it's not as bad as it can be.
Cold wave. Yeah.
Right. So I'm enjoying the show outside, as are you.
Perfect. Perfect for you. I said that I lived only a few miles from Bob, but right now I'm actually up in Santa Cruz, California on Monterey Bay. And it's not 103 degrees here, folks. It's like it goes down to 60. I'm freezing. I've got jackets on. I actually had a shirt, a sweatshirt, and a down jacket on to go walking. But I still keep my sandals. But, it can get pretty cold. But today was really beautiful, sunny. And so I'm actually doing the show outside, too, right now on the patio here, just two blocks from the ocean, which is absolutely phenomenal. So anyhow, now that we know where we are and what we're doing, so if you get any little wind spurts here, you'll know why. And if you get any splashes in the pool, you'll know why. But, Bob, no swimming laps right now. No swimming laps. Okay. So, Bob, I know you've been on the show many times, and you've shared your story in depth. But will you tell us a little bit about your wife, Shelley, how she got her brain injury, for any new listeners? And then please tell us what yours and Shelley's roles were before her accident. Maybe that's two questions. Let's just go for the first one. How did Shelly get her, her brain injury?
So, Shelly, it's been 8 years now. Shelly had a brain injury January of 2013, and like Donna said, it was a crazy freak accident that, you know, people like to focus on that side of it, that it was a homemade bottle of ginger ale that exploded at the split second that Shelly walked by it. She had set it on the counter to pour out. It had been in the refrigerator for several weeks, and she was going to pour it out and got busy, forgot about it, and literally that split second when she walked past it, it detonated. It, you know, turned to a bomb because the ingredients in the bottle, it was an empty bottle of Diet Coke that had been drank. So she used that bottle for the ginger ale that she made with my son, and it had was lemon, water, sugar, yeast, and that yeast turned into a bomb. So didn't know that was going to happen. It fermented, turned into a bomb, exploded, knocked her out. I was at work at the time. We were living up in, I was working in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. We were living in Victor, Idaho. So about 25 miles from our house. And so she was home by herself when this happened. She called me. She was knocked out for, we figure, about 20 minutes. And she called me right away, tried to explain what happened, and I could not. I mean, that's a story that you can't imagine, right? So
yeah, exactly.
She managed to take a picture, send it to me. Her face was swollen as could be. I was horrified. It was below zero that day, and she managed to get to the car. I tried to get some help to her, and I should have called an ambulance, but, you know, you don't always do what you should do, and you're not thinking clearly. So
exactly.
She got herself to scrape the ice and could barely see out and just looked out a little hole in the windshield and got herself to an urgent care in the small rural town we were in, and, you know, they thought that she had been a victim of violence, you know, of domestic violence is what they originally were thinking, and she explained to them what happened. I rushed home, rushed over the hill to her. By this time, the nurse had taken her to, driven her up to the next town to the little community hospital, and, you know, small town living where a nurse would do something like that. Anyway,
yeah, that's pretty amazing, huh?
Right. So to make a long story not quite so long, they were worried about her eye. They ruled that her eye was okay, but her nose was broken, and that she'd be fine. So went home, had an MRI, nothing alarming. She went home. She looked really, you know, was really swollen and black and blue, but life went on pretty quickly. She had a baking business that she was just getting started that she had down here in Arizona and that she was getting going up in Idaho. I ran a grocery store in Jackson. And so things were good. She went back to the commercial kitchen, was baking, and then about 12 days later, she called me to ask me to bring something home for dinner from the store I was managing, and she couldn't get the words out. So that, you know, scared the heck out of me. I rushed home, called the doctor. Doctor felt like it was, you know, gosh, it must be a brain injury. So that just started the ball rolling. We went and we saw a neurologist the next day the traveling neurologist that just happened to be visiting our small valley for, you know, the one time of the month he was going to be there the next day. So they got us in to see him, and he said she had a, you know, traumatic brain injury and that it was like a soldier that got hit by a bomb at war. Those were the words he told me, and that our life would never be the same. And he was very, you know, point blank about it.
Uh-huh.
And so from that day forward, things got pretty tough. She got substantially worse as time as the days went on. She had to relearn, eventually had to relearn to walk and talk again. And yeah, our roles completely. I'd always, you know, I'm a type A type of guy. I work hard. I work a lot of hours. She was a stay at home mom for years. Had been a school teacher back when we got married, you know, in the 90s, but had stayed home, taking care of the kids for years. And I, you know, we had our distinct roles where, you know, I handled providing for the family, and then she handled just about everything else. And I can't cook. I can barely boil water. And I just, it just all changed, right, immediately. And we had no support, no help up there. So we figured it out, and our roles they completely changed. And I started doing things that I'd never done before, you know, getting dinner on the table and weird, unique ways that I didn't think was possible for myself. Help the kids with homework, you know, our youngest son. Our kids were, they were 12 and 17 at the time. And so one was about to go off to college. And the other, though, you know, it was a very, very formative years for him. So I started, you know, with homework and making, arranging, getting him to and from practices and, you know, making connections with other parents to do things that it just really, I just, as well as working, you know, 75 hours a week. With my job. So our roles changed completely. And they've, you know, continued to, I've continued to take a lot bigger role on than I ever did before. And I'm happy to do it.
Well, you know, that's your last statement, I'm happy to do it, is a big, huge comment. And because that isn't the case for many people, you know. And
I see that a lot.
Because it is a big job, yeah.
Right.
It's hard, you know. It's a hard job to take on because, like you said, you have your job and you've got your own things that you're responsible for. And then all of a sudden, you are now doing your own plus another person's, and in your case, three people because you had your young sons to deal with too at that time.
Right.
I know when David, my husband David, had his brain injury, our lives went topsy-turvy too. You know, the same thing. I mean, I'm sure that any caregiver out here is, who's had a brain injury can relate to many of the things that you and I are going to be saying, Bob.
Right.
But David was the one in our family who handled what I always called the big problems, you know, the big things. Though we both worked outside of our homes, you know, David was a professor at Columbia University, and I was a first or a third grade teacher, depending on the year, in our local town that we lived in. And we both shared our household duties. We took care of everything together. But David was responsible for the finances and for the bills. And I knew nothing about those ideas, no, those areas or anything. And as long as the water ran from the spigots and the electricity was on, I was good. You know, basically, I took care of the kids when they were little. I got them off to school. I drove them to their daily sports activities, scheduled their medical and dental appointments. And I had dinners on the table when David arrived home. So our system worked for us, you know, but when David's brain imploded, everything fell on me and I was completely derailed. He was in a coma and I was a totally derailed train on the side of the tracks. But David was reduced to an infantile state, like you mentioned with Shelley. She had to learn how to walk and talk and everything. And it was David, he was like a new baby. I felt like I had a 125-pound baby in my house because he had lost 30 pounds in the hospital. He wasn't that low weight before the injury. He was about 155 or 150. But to 125-pound baby, that I was kind of moving around from here to there and everything, that's a lot different than bringing home a newborn, I'll tell you. And I didn't have 9 months to prepare for this event. It happened in an instant, like I said earlier. Many brain injuries do happen in an instant, from a car accident, from a fall, from just even a medical problem where you just have an aneurysm and you've done nothing to have it happen outwardly that you know about. But not only did David 24/7 care fall on me, so did the bills and the finances and the laundry,
right,
which he also did in our marriage, and all the big decisions and everything else. Everything fell on me. And remember, I said a couple seconds ago, I knew nothing of how to pay a bill. Worse yet, I had no idea how to get money from the ATM machine. I know, it sounds pretty pathetic, but I didn't need to. I didn't need it, so I didn't do it. David had shown me umpteen times, but I never paid attention. Why? Because I didn't need to. If I needed money, I asked him. And it saved me a trip to the ATM. I had enough grocery stores and shopping things to do. I didn't need that extra one. And it worked. I didn't need to do it, so I didn't do it. Well, that ignorance, my ignorance, backfired on me because I ran out of cash and I didn't know the PIN number to the ATM. So I say, not so smart. And a person in a coma can't tell you the PIN number. So that's just one example of the havoc that David's brain injury caused me. And I now know how to pay the bills. That is one of the jobs that has come to me in the role change. It's been my job for the past 16-plus years. We're getting closing in on 17 years past brain injury now. And I can also get money from the ATM in the bank. Well, I used to be able to. I haven't done that in a long time, so I hope I still can. I won't be caught short again because of ignorance, so I'll tell you that. So hearing all that stuff, and I know a lot of that stuff, some of it you probably did, and some of it Shelley probably did in your home. But, Bob, what kinds of upheavals happened in your home after your brain after Shelley's brain injury?
Well, thing just was turned upside down. You know, it was so hard. I had to wear so many hats, had to make sure that Taylor got off to school okay, that, you know, he got to did his homework, that he got to practice, that while I was running, you know, a high-volume store with, you know, stress-filled job, tons of responsibility, nearly 100 employees under the roof, it was amazing that a lot of people really stepped up that I wouldn't have expected them to, that, you know, we were new there. We'd only been there 2 years. And I had a lot of friends being the local grocer. A lot of acquaintances. And people were, you know, started bringing food by and bringing dinner by, doing a lot of things that, you know, other moms were going out of their way to make sure Taylor got to and from where he needed to go. And I just got really good at asking for help. And I never had done that before. I always did. And, you know, Shelley did so much at home, from the laundry to, you know, it's really kind of the traditional, you know, more 50s type, Ozzie and Harriet type family structure in a lot of ways. I found myself feeling sorry for myself for a little bit for just, you know, and I've talked about this in my blog and some of the things I've written, because I had gone through stuff in life. You know, my fiance got killed when I was 23, and I, you know, run a fastest growing startup supermarket chain in America back in the early 2000s that, you know, and I got pushed out of. And so I, you know, there were things that had happened to me that really impacted me. And so after this happened, I went down this woe is me, not this again. Why is bad things always happen to me? And I was in that mode for not very many days. And I looked at Shelley and saw how determined she was and how she wasn't feeling sorry for herself. She was fighting like hell to make it, to, you know, to walk again, to talk again. And I just, from that moment forward, my life's been filled with gratitude, kindness. It just really took a lot of the edge and sharpness off me, because I wasn't always the best, you know, I wasn't the nicest guy to be around. And I'm just, you know, I'm a completely different person now. And I attribute that to, you know, what we've gone through here and what we've had to, you know, had to battle as a family and as a couple. You know, we moved, but we moved back down to Arizona. We needed to be closer to family, friends. I got out of the grocery business and got into the mortgage business so I could have some flexibility and not be tied to brick and mortar for, you know, 70, 80 hours a week. And now I can, you know, I can work from home. I can, you know, I can do things. I can get her to appointments. I can do the things that I need to do to be her caregiver, and also be able to provide for us in a healthy manner. So it's been, man, I mean, I could go on for hours about this subject, to be honest with you, Donna.
I know. I totally understand that. And I can listen to it forever too, because we know what we're going through. I can relate to what you're saying, as you can relate to what I am saying as two caregivers.
Right.
And I do have to say, since Bob, you and I are friends, and Shelley and David also within this foursome, I don't know what you were like before Shelley's brain injury, but you are a good guy, and you really do take such great care of Shelley, and I love your family the way it is. So,
thank you.
Unfortunately, it had to come about. Oh, you're welcome. But
right.
It's too bad it
right.
had to come about
just,
that way.
Right. But she's doing, you know, she's just, there's some things that, you know, are always going to be different, that were life-changing and will always be a struggle. And I, you know, maybe, I say always, I don't know, you know, 20 years from now, but you know, we're in our mid-50s now, and it's just, you know, a lot of struggles with PTSD, and it's a totally invisible injury.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she looks great. People would not know that, just have casual conversations with her, but her brain's always in alert panic-type mode. And, you know, as you've seen, Donna, when a noise happens, we went, you know, just Friday night, we went to a restaurant and walked in, and it was pretty loud, you know, it was a lot of fun was going on, a lot of TVs were on, and it was, you know, Friday night, people are getting back out after being locked down for so long, and we just looked at each other and we said, you know, we told the gal at the front desk, we said, no, we're going to come, we'll come back another night when not quite so many people. And we just, you know, I know, I understand when those decisions need to be made, and, you know, I don't always get them completely right. Sometimes I think, okay, we got to get out of here now, and we should have 20 minutes ago, but that's a big, you know, that's a big role change for me. That's something that I, you know, we would never have to think about before, but my main priority is really being her protector and making sure that, you know, that I keep those triggers away from her as much as possible.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because I find, with David, I am, like you said, always on alert. Always on alert to and anything that he might need, or that he might like, especially at nighttime or something when he's sleeping. Okay, for example, we came up here to Santa Cruz, and I'm not going to go into the whole story, but I knew I needed to be in the same bedroom as he was, but we couldn't sleep in the same bed because it was too small, and he flails a little bit, you know, and he gets a nightmarish kind of things. So we just adjusted. I went out and bought a cot. We put a mattress on it. I sleep right next to the bed. We've got more room, you know, but that's what you do all the time. You're always watching to see, how can I make it better? How can they make it more easy for the other person? Because, and you know, the thing is, David does that too for me. It's not just, you know, not in the beginning, it was never, where he never did that because he wasn't able to. But now that he's, you know, we're so many years past, he does try to do things for me to make things easier for me as well. So, but that's all a learning process. And, that's what we do. But I think we're both very fortunate that we both have good marriages. We have people that we are really willing to, you know, step out and do extra for. And that's not to say that other people might not, but it depends on what kind of injury you're dealing with, too. You know, when you've got somebody that is so difficult to handle because of the brain injury, it can be a real challenge. And unfortunately, that's not my case. That's not my case at all, and I don't think that's your case at all. So we're lucky in that way, and I can just, you know, say that. But, you know, I want to go back to something you said earlier, Bob. You said for a while you were into that woe is me, you know, phase, like, why did this happen to me? Why is this going on? Why do I deserve this? You know, blah, 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 everything like that. You know, and I totally get that. I never really got into that stage because I knew that if I did, I wouldn't be able to get back out, I think. So what I did, I bury my thoughts. I bury my feelings like that. And I don't know whether that's good or bad, but it's what I do. It's how it works for me. And so I don't have to go, oh, my God, you know, I wish that we could do this. A friend of mine went to Italy, not to Italy, to Ireland recently, you know, and I was like, oh, geez, I want to do that too. Well, that's not in our cards right now, you know, so I can fret over it, and I can be sad over it, and I can be resentful over it. But what good is it going to do me, number one? And it's not going to do David any good either. And so we kind of make do with what we can do. And so, for example, instead of flying, we can drive. As long as I can do that, you know, we can drive and make make the accommodations still on the trip to make it easier for us. So those are the kinds of things. That's another huge role change that's taken place in my life, because before David's brain injury, he was always the driver. Whenever we went out to dinner at night, it would be David driving. If we were running errands, David drove. If we did any kind of trips, David drove. In fact, he was a race car driver. He loved to drive. You know, me, nope. I would drive because I had to, or because I wanted to get to someplace, but not because of enjoyment. And he actually enjoyed driving. So that's a huge change. I have to do all the driving now, and he has to accommodate himself by not being, you know, being a passenger. So that was a change that
it is.
It's a huge adjustment for him. In fact, I'll tell you a little story that happened when he first got home from the hospital. It was only, I guess it was maybe 5 months after he got home in April, and it was in May. So and his injury happened in January. So we were driving to Erie, Pennsylvania. Oh, my goodness, we're getting a lot of feedback. There we go. We were driving to Erie, Pennsylvania. I was driving. David was in the back seat, and we had a friend driving with us. And I look up, and I see David kind of moving back and forth with the car, and I said, David, what are you doing? And he goes, I'm driving. And I went, oh, no. I said, what do you mean you're driving? He said, well, I'm driving. I'm taking the turns the way they should be taken. Probably not the way I was taking them. But I was like, oh, my gosh, I got really nervous because I thought that he really thought he was driving. But then he explained to me, no, he was just, he's very, you know, he's bored, frankly. He was bored in the back seat.
Right.
And he was just, and he was pretending he was driving a race car, you know. So I thought, oh, thank goodness. But, you know, so that's a, again, just like I said, it's a huge role change. It isn't something I enjoy, but I do it. And we wanted to come up to Santa Cruz, and we're not going to fly because it's too difficult for that. And so we got in the car, and I drove it. We drove it in very, you know, in small chunks, but I drove it.
Right.
And I've been doing that for the past several years, so we can come up here to hang out with my son. So, yeah, it's just another thing you have to you do, you know. But
right.
So then I wanted to go in, unless you had something to add to that, I was going to go into another area. Are you good?
So, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I was going to say, even in normal life, okay, so people are stressed. People are always stressed, even in normal life. You even mentioned it before. Stress can be caused by jobs, by family responsibilities,
right.
by both close and extended family, and by health complications. And the list is endless. You know, keeping your head above water. And, Bob, that's what you need to do right now, too, since you're in the pool. Keep your head above water.
I'm out of the pool now. I'm sitting poolside now.
Okay. So, but keeping your head above water can be a real challenge. But most of us trudge along doing the best that we can because that's all we can do. You know, we just have to go from one minute to the next and do whatever you can do. But a normal day for me, when my kids were teenagers, now we're going to kind of going back to what you said earlier, when you're, because your boys were teenagers when this happened to you and Shelley. But my kids were already grown and gone off. They were already through college, each of them. So it was a little bit later in our lives. So, but as, you know, a normal day for when my kids were teenagers was to get them off to school, arrive in my classroom to greet 25 plus first or third graders with a smile on my face, spend a portion of my lunchtime preparing for future classes, rushing home after school to chauffeur my teens to their sports activities, take care of dinner responsibilities, spend more time preparing lesson plans for future classes, then finally, time for bed to start all over again the next day. And of course, everyone in families has his or her job. But when a family member is out of commission for any reason, whether it's the flu or a toothache that puts them down or whatever, the slack must be picked up by other family members. And that can cause a lot of extra stress. It can also cause anger, and it can cause resentment. So we know that you did start with the anger and the resentment, Bob, when your role changed in your family after Shelley's brain injury. So and you also mentioned that you saw that Shelley was handling it pretty well, and that kind of turned you around. But how did you make it just go away? You know, you had all these extra jobs that were thrust on you. So, yeah, what did you do?
Back, and I can remember the exact time where I was driving on the road when I just kind of, it just hit me that I just needed to go to a different level as a person and as a husband, as a father, as a boss at work. I mean, on and on and on. It just hit me. And it for so long, you know, I had a lot of anger. I had a lot of resentment, you know, not towards Shelley, but just in life. I had a chip on my shoulder in a lot of ways based on things that had happened to me. And some of it was I attributed to my success in business because I was, you know, I was pretty hardcore. I was ruthless.
Mm-hmm.
And I was successful in a lot of ways because of those traits. But the, mm-hmm. and, but those traits weren't, you know, they weren't going to do me any good in the situation I was in. And it hit me, thank goodness, it hit me early on. And I, you know, I became, not only did I become a good caregiver, but I became a better boss. I became more empathetic. I started to understand and care more what people were going through. And it just really carried over in all aspects of life. And, you know, that's a lot of what my book's about. And the advice I have is, you know, to just really be thankful. We all have, life's not perfect. Challenges are going to come up. Life's going to change. Life's going to change on a dime at times. But we've got to just keep the focus on gratitude, you know, and what we're grateful for.
Yeah.
And that's easier. It's easy for me to say right now because I've been able to get through a lot of things to get to this point. It's, you know, it's not, there's not a straight line to get here. That's for sure. It's pretty windy. But, you know, just once I was able to get to that point, then, you know, it's been teamwork ever since. And it's been teamwork in a different way than it was teamwork prior to the injury. And there's a lot to be thankful for as far as the way that's progressed and the way I was able to kind of shift my perspective to a positive one rather than a negative woe is me one that I really could have continued. I could have continued to go down that path, and I don't know where we would have ended up. I mean, because we were up there. You know, Shelley was, she was in bad shape, and we were in a remote area, sub-zero temperatures. She didn't have any friends or family near her. And, you know, I realized that I needed, man, if I wasn't going to step up, nobody else was going to. And so I've carried that ever since.
Well, I hope our listeners are hearing, not just listening tonight, what you're saying, but hearing what you're saying, because it's not an easy change to make, but it is a positive one, and obviously one that is going to help by looking at the positive side, by trying to get rid of the negative thoughts and negative feelings. Because, you know, those are never going to help you, never. And that's why I won't think about it. That's why I keep saying I bury it. Because if I started to think how awful things are, or how I wish things were different or better, or we could do this and that, I could go down that road. It would be so easy. It was a slippery slope to depression, is basically what we're saying. You know, and I'm not ready to do that. I don't want to do that. It's not good for me. It's not good for David. So we just say, okay, we'll make the best of it. And I know I'm not saying that that's easy for people to do. It certainly isn't. It's a hard thing to do. And however you can manage it, you try to do it. For me, it's simply not thinking about it, just putting it out of my head and just living what I have. And so that works for me, and I'm hoping that idea might be something that our listeners might want to try. But I'm interested in how Shelley's doing too on this. After brain injury, survivors' abilities are usually greatly compromised. You know, whether it be physical disabilities that you obviously can see, as David has, or whether it be emotional or cognitive disabilities, and Shelley has the PTSD, it's not visible. But how does Shelley cope with the role changes in her life? Has she accepted her new normal? And I know, oh, wait a minute, I know she hates that term.
She hates the term
new normal. I know she does.
I mean, it's, and it's,
I know,
it's a very, you know, it's, you hear that term a lot, and it does describe things pretty well, but she hates it. So I don't use it around
her. I know
she
does.
But, you know, she...
But what's helped her to move on? What's helped her to move on in her new, new life, basically?
She keeps active. She's somebody with a lot of hobbies. She's very talented as far as, you know, arts, craft, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So she does that.
Ooh.
And baking, and she's an amazing baker.
Yeah.
And it took her a while to, you know, she really worked hard to put those pieces, you know, to put those brain cells back together where she could bake the, you know, like she could bake before. I mean, that didn't happen overnight. And so she was really focused on baby steps to make improvements every day. And there's been times where she was, or in the early days when she couldn't do things and she felt like the care that she was getting, the medical care was ridiculous. But they didn't understand. There were a lot of days where she was just very difficult to deal with because she just did not fit in a lot of what we had to do. But we got past that. We found the right care. And so she's, ever since, and every day she works on improvement. And she, you know, whether it's the brain exercise game she plays on her iPad to the detail she does when she paints, you know, paints things, and she's constantly keeping busy in ways that stimulate her and challenge her. But she knows where her boundaries are, so she doesn't push herself to a point where she's going to be, you know, stressed and frantic, but she pushes herself every day to make improvements, and it amazes me to see.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, a lot of that's what's rubbed off on me, because I'm thinking, if you know, if she's going to be this positive and not going to feel sorry for herself, well, I'm sure not going to. And I just, and then
yeah.
It's become a way of life now. It's, you know, we're so far through that. You know, just in the 5 years that I've known you, Donna, I mean, we'd come a long ways in those 3.5 years that we got until we got to know you. And then in the 5 years since, you know, because we're at 8.5 years now since their accident. And it's just, you know, there's all of the improvements continue to happen, both, you know, from the brain injury side of things and recovery side of things to just, you know, the human being better human being side of things too. And I just think that we know what our roles are, and we know how to make the engine work at this point. And it's so much different than how it was pre-accident. And it's kind of cool to look back on and see how far we've come. And I don't always think about it. You know, I write, so that allows me to reflect and talk about things. But, you know, being on this show, it brings up thoughts that I haven't really thought about in a while. And it's good to go there.
Yeah, so the show is kind of like therapy, which kind of brings me to my next question. Because I've read, you know, that family therapy can help with family members and how they react and cope with a brain injury of a loved one. Have you or Shelley or both of you ever tried family therapy?
You know, we've done a few things. You know, our youngest son's had some issues. It was really hard on him to see this happen to mom at the age that he was. And so we've done some therapy that's included him that was really valuable, because I think it made us all realize what an impact this injury had on him.
Mm-hmm.
And not so much our older son, who's 26 now, that was 17 when it happened. But, you know, Taylor at 12, you know, he had a lot of anger and a lot of hurt that something like that would happen to his mom. And so mm-hmm. There was about a, you know, I'd say a 8-month period. Only about 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago, where we went through some really good therapy down here in Arizona. And, you know, I've had bad therapy and I've had good therapy. And therapy is damaging. I mean, it can do a lot of harm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important that when you're having therapy like that, that you recognize pretty quickly whether it's going to help or whether it's going to hurt. And if it's going to hurt, you know, fire that therapist pretty darn quick.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really glad to hear that. I didn't know whether you would ever have that, and I just wanted to throw that question in there because
I haven't really thought about. We did, and we went through it, and it was it helped us. It helped Taylor a lot,
uh-huh.
and it helped us too. And I have, you know, I hadn't put much thought about that in the last few years.
Yeah, well, you know, I think a lot of people will still have a stigma about going to a therapist. I know it's becoming a lot more common these days, and people are proud
right.
of saying, I have a therapist, you know, which is good because it takes away that stigma. It takes away that that bad feeling about going to a therapist because you know, whatever. And so I'm glad to hear that you have done that and taken advantage of the help there. And I think that would be good for a lot of people who can, you know, who can do it, because you get to talk to somebody about it, a neutral person who's not going to be judgmental.
Right.
And I think that would be very helpful. Now I don't know how insurance pays for a family therapy, whether, you know, if people have to have good insurance to have that, and if it's,
yeah,
if it's
they don't
not,
pay
then
enough.
It probably makes it very, yeah, oh, that's what I was saying. I thought they rarely pay enough for family therapy, and
right.
which makes it difficult for folks to reach out for the help that they desperately need. But if it were available, I think that a lot of people, you know, I would hope that they would be able to take advantage of it, because it can definitely benefit getting those thoughts out. And I think, now I never did the therapy, I never felt the need to do that, but I also wrote a book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, and I kind of got all my thoughts out there in that book. I have a blog, Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury, which I do a lot of work with brain injury survivors and caregivers and passing off information. Another website, DonnaFragerski.com, that has a lot about the brain injury as well as everything else in my life. So I think I've used all of those tools. Oh, and of course, this radio show. I get to talk about brain injury every 2 weeks. I'm studying it for every show because I have to prepare in advance for the show. So when I'm talking about role changes, I'm not just talking off the top of my head half the time. I'm studying it all before I come to the show, before I sign on. And so I think that has all become a part of my therapy. And also the next thing I wanted to bring up is a huge area of therapy, and that's communication. Communication, I think, is key when a brain injury is involved, you know, because obviously the brain injured survivor is not happy about his or her new situation, and it most likely makes him or her feel inadequate and useless and frustrated. And so I think by communicating between, for example, David and I, as spouses, have to communicate. You know, and because we do, we communicate very well. We talk about things. I tune into him when he's not talking. just when he's there. I'm tuned in to his needs. I think he's tuned in to my needs as well. But I also think that, you know, I check periodically, like, how are you feeling? How are you doing with this? What do you think about, you know, not being able to drive?
Right.
What do you think about? I mean, he feels, I know he feels bad about things because he knows it takes a toll on me. The driving up here to Santa Cruz, going through Bakersfield, which we had a toast to you, Bob and Shelley, from being from Bakersfield while we were there at Fogarty's.
Right.
I know, we were at Fogarty's. I wish you could have been there with us. But, you know, so he sees the toll it takes on me packing the car. You know, it's I'm especially packing in the heat of Phoenix, of Palm Desert and Bakersfield. Holy moly. And then once I got here, then I had to put things down, I mean, winter coat on to unpack. But you know, it's a toll. It really is. And so I think by talking about these things and for him understanding what I'm also going through is a real big help. So do you find, Bob, that Shelley experiences bouts of frustration from not being able to do everything that she was easily able to do before her brain injury? And how do you deal with that to help her feel more at ease?
You know, we've not as much as years past, but it hurts her that she's not able to quickly multiply something in her head like she could before. And it just, sometimes she just gets sad, you know, that life's not quite, she's not able to do what she could do. And her memory isn't what it was. And that's when it seems like it bothers her most, is when she's like, gosh, I can't remember that. And that hurt, you know, that's sad. And, but she, you know, for the most, I try to stay in tune. You know, I try to be a lot more aware than I used to be. I think awareness is a big.
Yes.
You know, there's big importance. That's you know, when you talk about communication, you know, awareness goes right there with it. Just being in tune with good days versus bad days. And something that I just had to learn, and it took me a while. I'm sensitive. I get offended easy. You know, in the past I really did. I get my, you know, feelings hurt. I really had to thicken my skin and understand that her frustration that she's taking out on me isn't personal against me. It's because I'm the person that's there that can take it. And so we had there was a lot of that, a lot of months, you know, a few years of you know, she's take your frustration out on Bob, and Bob's going to take it and let it roll off my back. And that would have never happened before. You know, that's something I've learned. That's a role change in itself, is that, you know, just, okay, you know, pile it on me. I can take it. You know, you need this. You need to vent. You need to let out your frustrations. And, you know, that's fine if you're going to let them out on me. I understand. And it took a little bit for me to come to that realization. But I have
now.
It's not
an easy
realization.
And I, you know,
perfect. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I snap and I think, oh, God, why did I, you know, or I say something quick and I think, oh, I shouldn't have said that. You know, we all do that.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I know, I find that with David, sometimes when he's a little frustrated, he'll talk in a more exaggerated voice. And it's just a little louder, you know. And I end up taking offense to it because I think he's angry at me. And it's the communication then. It's like, you know, I was never able to say anything to him about that because I never wanted to hurt his feelings. But now I will say, you know, are you angry at me, or why are you talking to me like that? And it'll bring it back down to both of us realizing that he'll say, but I'm not angry at you. I said, but it sounds like you're angry at me.
Right.
You know, but he said, I'm not,
you
know.
That sounds familiar. That sounds really familiar.
Really? You know, well, the thing is, when David was working at Columbia in New York City, he'd come home and there's his New York City professor demeanor, okay, in his laboratory. It's work, 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 get it done. You know, there's no little,
right.
I mean, I know there's chit-chat and things going on, but it's serious stuff. And you know how New York people are anyhow, well, you do. You know,
right.
it's like business and snappy and sharp, you know, sharp sometimes. And sometimes he would come home and he would be like that. And I would take offense to it because I thought he was angry at me. And I'm like, what did I do? You just walked in the door. I haven't had a chance to do anything bad yet, you know. So, but then when we finally discussed it, and again, there's that communication. We discussed it, and I told him that, I don't understand why you're yelling at me. And he's like, but I'm not. I said, but you are. You really are. You're very snappy. And then we understood what it was. We finally figured out it's his New York self, you know, and then he'd come home to New Jersey and he usually would doff that self at the door, but sometimes the self slipped in. And so by talking about it, all I could say, you know, to him later is like, yeah, you've got your New York self here, and he could change it because he knew it, you know, and otherwise instead of my getting upset. And so I'm saying this because it's the same thing with brain injury. If you communicate and tell people and talk about what's bothering you or how you might change or how it might help to do something differently, it just works better. It just works better.
Right.
Well, it doesn't I'm saying it in brain injury, but heck, that's in life, period. You know, you don't have to have a brain injury to talk and communicate to find out what's going on in your relationship. But, yeah, so that I think that's really important. And this is
but
a question for my listeners.
Happened, Donna,
oh, go ahead.
You know,
go
for
ahead,
us, Bob. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So, you know.
I can hear you.
For us, we have, really impacted our relationship in a positive way, in a lot of positive ways. And that's a blessing because it could have gone the other way for both of us. It really could have.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, it definitely could have. And I know it has for many people, you know, that maybe had been devoted spouses before. But again, it depends. You know, it's the kind of brain injury somebody has. I mean, if a person comes back from the brain injury, such a changed person that they're violent, where they may never have been before. They may have been the most gentle person before, and the brain has changed so drastically to make them violent and angry and belligerent all the time. That would be really difficult to take. And David also always tells me, he's like, you know, if I were like that, I would want you to leave me. I wouldn't want you to be in this life like that. Now, I'm not sure. My answer to him is no, I would never leave you, you know, but I can understand. But I'm not good. I cannot be judgmental about anyone else because I have seen on social media so many cases where a spouse has been so belligerent and abusing that the person could not stay with him or her. Yes. And I can't be judgmental and say, what do you mean? That person has a brain injury. How can you leave them? You know, you can't. It's all different. And, you know, you have to make the best choice for your life and the person with the brain injury's life. And sometimes the best situation would be putting them into a safer place. One of our, you know, Jeanette, she talks about her husband all the time on the show. And when Dwayne came back from Iraq with brain, he had 5 brain injuries over there. I mean, good God, that's horrible, you know, in the name of our country. But he has, you know, he's gotten worse through the years. And Jeanette stayed with him for years and years and years. And now I think he's living with her sister, who he doesn't get belligerent with. And so Jeanette is able to have interactions with him without
right.
having the abuse towards her all the time. And I'm telling this story because it's she tells it all the time, and it's all over my website, because anytime you if you go to Jeanette Davidson Mayer, she'll talk about that story. And she's doing what's best for her husband, not because she doesn't want to be with him, but because it's safer. So, you know, those are the kinds
right.
of things you have to deal with brain injury, and they're all individual things that you have to figure out. So
I found
next
that Shelly has a lot less patience.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, point of sometimes no patience at all. And, again, you know, I don't – that was hard at first. And I took it personally.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
now it's just, you know, I understand that's part of the brain injury. And, you know, I
yeah.
try to make things happen quick enough that, you know, that lack of patience doesn't really get amplified too much, too often, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a different life. It is being more patient and being more accepting of everything.
Right.
And if you can do that, and I'm not saying it's easy, if you can do that, it will help everyone. It'll help your survivor.
Right.
It'll also help you as the caregiver. So yeah. So
don't sweat the small stuff.
Right. Yeah. If you can, don't do it. You know, it's hard to do that, but you know, don't do it. So
right.
I'm going to go into another area here. I just want to have a question for my listeners. And it's kind of a, well, it's not really, well, I'll just do it. I know that you can't answer live to the listeners, but think about the questions and answer in your own mind. Because I do want you to go away with thinking about something more than what Bob and I just talked about. But are you prepared to take on the responsibilities of your partner or a close family member who might incur a brain injury? As I mentioned earlier, I was not. If I had paid attention to paying bills and getting money from the ATM, I would have saved myself a lot of angst. So I know nobody ever thinks about, oh, a brain injury. And I said, I never did. I never even heard of brain injury before David had one. But, you know, it happens, and it happens fast, and you need to be somewhat prepared. For example, maybe you should know where a hospital is, a local hospital you want to go to. We had just moved. Well, not just. We had moved years prior, but I never bothered about knowing the hospital. So anyhow, those are things that you need to be prepared with. So what are some of the things you might do to be ready for a medical emergency that can turn your life upside down? Think about those. What can you do in your own life? Maybe having a post-it note, a magnet post-it note on your refrigerator of the local hospital, of the ambulance, you know, that you want to use, whatever, for somebody to come take care of the kids if you have an emergency, you know, or your dog, whatever. So these are questions I just want you to think about. Do you know what other members of your family do? And now we're talking about role changes here. Are you ready to take the step up to take over if an emergency happens? Well, you all know, because I admitted it quite openly, that I had no idea how to pay a bill. I paid some bills two times. Some bills I didn't pay at all. It took a while to get settled into the process. And I made big mistakes that cost me paying, you know, a fine for not paying. What do they call them? Fines, whatever. They're not fines, but you know what I mean. So anyhow, you need to know these kinds of things. So, Bob, what is the one thing that you wish you knew before your emergency happened?
Gosh, that's quite a question. I wish... that I knew. I wish I knew more about brain injuries. I wish I knew that.
Yeah.
I wish I couldn't have got her. I wish she could have got treatment sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Because we thought she was fine. for quite some, you know, for a couple of weeks. And would have early detection helped? I don't know. But I've often thought about that. You know, I wish I would have been. I feel kind of clueless. Like I just, you know, like back then I was clueless where I just thought, oh, well, she's fine. And I didn't, you know, I wasn't as aware as I am now. And I wish I would have been more aware back then.
Yeah. And I agree with you on that totally. Because like I said, I never knew what a brain injury was, you know. And had I known it, maybe we would have gotten to the hospital. David didn't want me to call the ambulance right away. And maybe I would have overridden that thought and gotten him in, you know, 2 minutes earlier than when he finally decided. Because, as you know, with brain injury, timing is important. The longer your brain is bleeding, the more damage is being done. So, you know, get into action immediately when you have that. So, you know, those are just some of the things that we learn afterwards. And I think that's one of the reasons why I've written my book. You're writing your book, and we do this radio show and everything else that we do. And at this point, I have to close us down because another host is going to be preparing to come on. So I want to say thank you, Bob, so much, Bob Millsap, for sharing so much of your life and offering hope to other survivors, caregivers, actually, not survivors. But you can always learn more about Bob on my blog, number one, Bob Millsap. Just put his name in Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury. And I'm scrolling back up to see... where is it? Here it is. Just tell me, 10,000days.blog.
Yeah, 10,000days.blog. I just, I write something every, I don't know, not every month to 6 weeks or so. And I just wrote a little piece yesterday morning that I just put on there. So it's about my growth, the growth of gratitude in my life. A lot of what I've talked about today, I wrote about that yesterday. So, and then my book will be, you know, I'm in the finishing stages, going back and forth with my publisher. I've got 74,000 words written, 29 chapters. Been working on it for 3 years, so I feel like there's light at the end of the tunnel. So, hopefully there is.
Hopefully there is. I'm looking forward to reading it. I'll tell you that. So folks, just check out SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. And on my next show will be August 15th when my guest will be Laura Miller. She is a survivor, and she's going to be talking a lot about her positive attitude through her recovery. And I believe she's also a yoga teacher. So we're going to get some interesting information there. So as I always say, if you liked my show, please tell 10 of your friends. If you hated it, well, tell 10 of your enemies. That works for me. So as the clock is ticking up to 6:50, it's almost there. We have to say goodnight, everybody. But please stay tuned to the next show with Matt Duffin. It starts at 7 p.m. Pacific time, and I'll see you on August 15th, same time, same station, with Laura Miller. So I want to say, first off, Bob, thank you so, so much for being on the show. And I wish that you could share a little bit of that warmth that you have down there in Phoenix with us up here, because it's a little chilly.
It's feeling pretty good out here right now, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I bet you it is, especially in the pool. Okay. Well, thanks for sharing
the
power with
Donna.
Me, Bob. Okay, take care. Tell Shelly hi.
I will.
Okay.
I will. All right. And we'll see you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Good night, everybody. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for tuning in to another Fork in the Road on the Brain Injury Radio Network.